My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Super J-Cast. I'm Joel, joined by Damon McDonald. It is Wednesday the 9th of July, 2025. This is episode 369. What's going on?
This is easy listening radio with Joel and Damon on WKCB. In this hour, we'll play some Kenny G. I don't know what else. Good. I think we saw some pretty decent pro wrestling this past week. Yeah, some surprises. Yes. We also saw some okay pro wrestling, and we have news and all kinds of stuff. So thanks for joining us. We are set. Joel's a little tired. He's rightfully so, let's be honest. Do you mind me spilling the beans on this one, or do you want me to?
No, not so.
But all right. He had a field trip with his class, over 20 children, on a lake, kayaking, all kinds of stuff. He's like Mr. Outdoors. And he's exhausted, and rightfully so. I don't think I would have been able to do that. I would have walked away. I would have been like, you know what, kid, you fucking take care. I don't give a shit. You're on your own. You're old enough. Leave me alone.
I did sort of quietly quit towards the end of the session, and just like after I'd been pulled off of the kayak the third time, I was just like, you know what? Fuck this. I just slowly, quietly paddled back to the shore and got out and showered and got dressed. Right, one of the instructors was like, oh, you took the easy way out. I was just like, I don't know what you mean, mate.
Nobody's going to miss these kids. I'm out of here.
It's like, I've got really to supervise these two children sitting at the side. They cannot be sitting here by themselves. It's a critical safeguarding issue that I leave the lake and the other 27 children and right. Get an ice lolly and stand with these two children who are not participating.
Can I ask, you know what, I was going to ask you a question, but I don't even want you to answer it because it's probably something that, well, the correct answer is no, of course not. But I'm like, do you sneak a couple beers on the trip or something? absolutely not. Absolutely right. Not. No, of course
not. Because you know what, I'd fall asleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be it. That's what happens to me these days. I have a couple of drinks and I'm toast.
Oh, well, yeah. Are you a sunburny kind of guy?
Yeah, I do have to apply sun cream.
Yeah. Yeah. I am as pale as I'm litmus paper. I don't tan. I just instantly burn, and no tan. Then it just fades away. So yeah, I'm a sunscreen kind of guy. I gotta. Cheryl's even worse. Oh my God. Cheryl has to wear something in the car. Like she has to, I have like a hoodie in the car that I just keep in there. Just in case.
Right.
And she uses it to cover her legs in the summer because if the sun, if we drive too long and the sun beats down, she'll get burnt. She'll get burnt. She's that fair. Yeah. I'm like, I married fucking Casper the Ghost. Christ. Fucking. You fuck. Alrighty then. Where will the fun take us today, Joel?
I kind of want to talk about something that's not fun. Something that's quite horrible, but I want your thoughts on it. As an experienced sports broadcast reporter, I'll be interested to hear your take on this situation and how things happen across the pond. So I'm very upset with Arsenal at the moment. And this is going to get into some quite triggering stuff. So if you maybe skip ahead, I don't know, about 10 minutes or so if you don't want to hear this sort of stuff. But if you are familiar with Arsenal and the Premier League, you probably know what I'm going to talk about. So I think I've mentioned him on the podcast before. We've had this player on our books called Thomas Partey, who has recently been released and has, I think it was last week or the week before that. No, it would have been last week because I would have talked about it in the podcast otherwise, has been charged with, I think it was like three counts of rape and two counts of sexual assault or something. Yeah, just like absolutely horrendous stuff. But the thing that annoys me is everyone knew about it. This was one of like the biggest open secrets. It's been, I think like 3 years ago, like, unnamed Premier League footballer accused of da-da-da-da-da. So everyone knew who it was, but obviously there's contempt of court laws in the UK that prevented this player from being explicitly named. But it was kind of a tricky situation from that point because he was under investigation for those crimes, but not charged with anything. But that it's him still getting picked week in, week out, didn't sit right with me. And then there was stuff that made me even more queasy, which was our manager, who I've lost a lot of respect for, praising him in interviews, saying, oh, it's so good to see him playing well after everything he's been through. And it's like, whoa, what, hold on a second. What exactly do you mean? And he backtracked from that. It was like, I meant after his injuries. Like, we know what you meant. And the thing that really sickens me is apparently a few weeks ago, we were trying to offer him a contract extension, offer him a new contract. So I'm really annoyed that this is something that the club thought was acceptable. And they knew exactly what was going on. There've been complaints even before the news was originally leaked. Well, I say leaked, but you know, the stuff started filtering out about unnamed Premier League footballer, and the victims have been in dialogue with the club safeguarding team. And I'm just really upset that at no point did anyone take a stand and think, you know what, this is not okay, right? This is Arsenal Football Club. We stand for something bigger than just, you know, having players who are good at kicking the ball. And I know they could have opened themselves up to being on the receiving end of legal action. You know, if they dropped Thomas Partey, stopped playing him, or, you know, put him in reserves, whatever, then he could have potentially sued them. But then I kind of think, well, so what?
Why? Why would it? No. I mean, I'm actually kind of shocked here. So correct me if I'm wrong, if this is how I'm understanding it. This dude played games while he was under investigation?
Correct. And I'm thinking, like, if you or I were under investigation for serious sexual
assault, you're getting a leave.
Yeah, we would not be welcome back to our jobs.
No.
And rightly so. So what I would have liked is, at the very least, like, just, you know, drop him from the team, just say, oh, it's a tactical thing, or say, oh, he's injured. And then the next available transfer window, just quietly try to sell him to one of the teams in Saudi Arabia.
But here's the thing. You don't have to play him. Like, he's not contractually obligated, like the team or the coach, or you're not contractually obligated to play him, right?
Correct. Yeah.
He's on a leave.
Because he was quite good at football. And that's disgusting to me.
No. So we've had similar situations, Joel, with our very own Philadelphia Flyers hockey team and our goaltender, who there were allegations made of when he was in juniors. On Team Canada, there was whole fucking thing that went down with one girl and multiple guys and just fucking pretty horrific, right? I mean, that player, Carter Hart, they named the players in every one of the players. Like, from that moment, they were like, okay, you're on indefinite leave. You're on indefinite leave. You're not on the roster. Like I don't know how it works over there with their contracts, but there are provisions in a contract that state that if you get into fucking legal issues, this will happen. And that happened. So, yeah, the fact that Arsenal would continue to play him is
publicly praise him and try to offer him a contract extension. Like, imagine if he'd signed that. Imagine if he'd extended the contract and it suddenly, instead of former Arsenal player charged with rape and sexual assault, it was Thomas Partey, who's just signed a new contract, offered with, you know, big smiles and handshakes from all the management, top to bottom of the club, charged with rape and sexual assault. It could have been even worse, but it's bad enough as it is. This is, to me, it's an indelible stain upon the club's reputation for allowing it to happen.
And you're saying they knew. Everyone knew that this happened. Yeah, that's preposterous. Yeah, that's not a good look. That's not even a good look. You know what? That's fucking...
It's unforgivable. Come
on. Would the league step in at that point?
Well, this is what I'm thinking. Like, I've, at the very least, I hope moving forward that we can get some good out of this and have some sort of league-dictated protocol for what happens if a player is under investigation for a serious crime. And like you, I think that should now be standard in contracts. I think when they're signing a contract to joining a team, if you become under investigation for XYZ, then you're indefinitely suspended. And I know, like, there's probably... I don't know. I've probably sort of chased off this subsection of the audience, but there might be people listening going, oh, you know, women could just make things up and false accusations could ruin their career. I don't buy that, right? The whole criminal justice system in the UK is so stacked against the victims of these sorts of crimes. It's near impossible to prove and get a conviction. So, and the women who do go public and speak out about this just get horrendous abuse online, and in a lot of these instances, I think one of the victims ended up actually foregoing a large amount of money that was offered as a non-disclosure agreement, and like, it ruins their lives speaking out about this stuff. So I don't buy that is something that makes it okay to hand wave accusations like that. So if anything good can come out of this, like, there's got to be something in place to stop this from happening again. And like, fuck Arsenal and fuck Mikel Arteta and all the people in charge of the club that allowed this to happen. And how do I recalibrate my relationship with this football club that I've supported since I was a little boy? I feel like it's been sort of taken away from me that I can't. I was thinking of taking Esther to a game. I wanted to take her to the Emirates Cup, and now how can I, in good conscience, take her to cheer for a team when I know it has absolutely no moral standards whatsoever?
Yeah, I mean, I hear you loud and clear. And again, I'm not even saying that, you know, I think there's due process and that needs to be played out. But even with that said, you how do you play a game with that on your conscience? You know what I mean? Like how do you it has to be a suspension. Like, just call it whatever you want to call it. Leave, whatever. But the fact that if the team was well aware and did that, that's
no one stepped in to say this is really bad. We shouldn't be doing this. That there was no one who felt they could stand up to whoever.
Well, no one who can make the change. Yeah, no one who can. Yeah, apparently. I mean, who knows what's going on behind the scenes? But yeah. What do you do now? Do you seriously? I'm like. Do you just not watch football, or do you now try to support another team, or like what do you do? What do you do as a fan?
I don't know. I don't feel excited about watching them anymore. I certainly don't want to invest money into it. I'm not going to be, you know, buying any merchandise I don't know.
Now I got to take back all your gifts. No, I'm just kidding. getting an invite. Anyway, you can, the way I saw it was you can get Arsenal shit. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't going to do that way. That sucks, dude. I mean, honestly, honestly, there's a bigger fucking picture here besides, you know, some dude's fandom. But it sucks. It sucks because it's correct me if I'm wrong. It's you're almost embarrassed to admit you're an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, we are quite rightly the, I don't want to say laughing stock. It's not a laughing matter, but we are, you know,
shamed.
Yeah, shamed. Yeah, dragged through the mud, rightly so. And every single club is looking at Arsenal, thinking, "What a shitty club for allowing that to happen, for enabling that and encouraging that."
What's easier, not watch the football or pick another team? Can you do it? Could you honestly? I don't know if I could. Like, I don't know if I could be like, you give me another team besides the Leafs. I don't think I could do it. You know what I mean? Like, if this were a Maple Leaf situation, I don't know what I would do. Like, I would watch hockey still, but I don't know if I would have a team that I would root for because I don't, I'm like, a lot of that is just baked into your DNA, I think, sometimes. I don't know, dude. Yeah, I can't tell you.
For 30 years. I can't.
Right. Okay, but let's put it this way. If sorry, Editor Dan, I'm going to say Editor Dan. If Editor Dan, there are allegations. I'm not saying that there are. Please, I want to be very clear. But, you know what I mean? Would you turn your back? Would you be like, all right, we got to find a new editor, and nice knowing you.
I would like to think that if I did something really bad, that you would show the moral character to disown me because I would deserve it.
Okay, but what about friends stick together? We'll get you through the tough spot. We'll make you better. I'm there to support. I don't like what you did, obviously. I fucking hate what you did, but you're my friend, and I'm going to help you through this.
I think there's like an element of rehabilitation, which is important, but you know, staying and doing the thing that you were doing before, I think that's off the table.
Oh, of course. Yeah. But okay. But again, it might be a little bit easier if you don't know the person and versus a sports conglomerate machine, you know what I mean? Like a faceless, nameless thing. I don't know what you do. I can't tell you what to do. But that's a terrible position to be put in, and I think you would feel much better if the fucking club did the right thing right out of the gate, and you wouldn't have to deal with this. Like, you wouldn't have to deal with this fucking moral dilemma. Like, you would be like, all right, that player, fucking, you know, you're due process, but you can't be associated with this team at this time. You have to stand in front of your peers, and, you know, let the facts come out and let the chips fall where they may. But to put you and every other Arsenal fan in that position of what you're going through right now, that's fucking horrific. Just for that alone, Joel.
Think about all the factors like women fans or fans, yes, who have been victims of sexual assault. What kind of message is it sending to them?
Joel, again, what? Here's, this would be my decision. You don't care about me as a fan, and not that there was any question of this, but you really don't care about me as a fan. You care about me spending money. Because you wouldn't make, not you, Joel, you Arsenal, wouldn't have done this if you were serious about us being fans. Because the situation that you put us in, now we have to make a fucking choice when we shouldn't have had to make this choice. And I know this is like literally the bottom rung of the problems in this scenario, but like the fact that team that you supported for 30 years, and there are people there that probably have supported it 60 years, 70 years, that the club would put them in a position, that's where I would turn my back. That's the reason why I would turn my back on it and be like, you know what? I'm Chelsea now, or I'm fucking whomever. That would be it, because you, I didn't do this. You did this. And to me, that's unacceptable. Over and above the fact that, you know, you're making terrible decisions. Absolutely terrible decisions. Yeah. I mean, I'm literally looking around my office right now, and the amount of Maple Leaf things that I have that I would be like, I'd have to give it away. I'd have to, again, you fucked it. Like, again, you're not going to make the playoffs. You're going to lose in the first round. You're going to leaf the leafy thing that you do. Great. That's part of sports and whatever, I guess, whatever. That? You're making me uncomfortable walking down the fucking street if I wear an Arsenal hat. Come on. Sorry, dude. I mean, that would be me. I would be just fucking enraged with the team. Absolutely fucking enraged with the team. But here's the thing. I don't know, I know hockey, I know football, I know American football, baseball. I know it's baked into the collective bargaining agreements. And again, I'm living it right now. Our goaltender, who quite honestly was probably the most marketable guy on the Flyers, which isn't saying much, but okay. Like, he's suspended from the team. They're going through the court process of this sexual assault thing. And the Flyers had to move on until it got sorted. And not for nothing, unfortunately, whether it's good or bad, if the player was 1,000% not guilty and not even – his name is in the mud. His name will always kind of be in the mud. It's terrible, man. It's a terrible thing. I'm sorry you have to go through that.
Maybe, listeners, you can help choose a new team for me to follow.
You want to follow Chelsea? Want to do Chelsea?
No.
No? Okay. All right. What would be second? Is there a number two?
I want to do a local team. I can do Bobby Tracy FC, or maybe one of the bigger teams like Plymouth or Exeter or something like that.
How about Bournemouth? You're close there. Would you do Bournemouth?
No, it's too far away. That's like a 2.5-hour drive. I think it would have to be somewhere where I can start attending games.
Okay. You're going to start small. Work them up.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry, I got a text from a T-Con. He says, Fulham is... I don't know who that might be. All right, let's move on. We started off with a very serious topic, Joel. Jeez.
I think it was important to address. I feel it would be sending out the wrong message to ignore and hand wave that.
You're a stand-up dude. You're a stand-up dude.
Right, let's talk New Japan sold him. So we had a show Friday, July the 4th from the Tokyo Budokan with an attendance of 1,377, which is down bad from the previous year's show, which was 2,423.
I blame Zach.
Over 1,000 people fewer than last year, which the LIJ thing, Naito Bushi, is a huge factor here. So the Tokyo Budokan, it's in a part of northern Tokyo, where Naito and Bushi are from. And that obviously has played a big impact here. And also the fact that I think Tanahashi Jam got all of the stronger matches. Surprisingly, Damon, the late addition of the Never Six-Man titles to this show didn't help. But any thoughts on the attendance? Is this something that you think New Japan will just sort of hand wave and be like, it's just the Naito fans, or is this he tugging at your collar?
This is not the first time we've been a little concerned, and that feels like a significant drop. I was talking to someone last week, and Naito came up. We haven't really heard, at least I haven't, maybe he has and I missed it. We haven't really heard from him, have we?
Yeah, we have. He's been doing stuff, doing sort of talk shows, and there's announcements in the work and stuff. I don't know exactly what the nature of it is, if it's going to be like produce shows or whatever, but yeah, he's been doing things.
Do you think there's a chance that he might come back?
Yeah.
I do too. I did get a sense of that is certainly not off the table. I wonder if they have something up their sleeves. Maybe. Who knows? And again, speculation here. But yes, look, again, we're not so concerned about individual one-off shows when attendance figures are down. It's trends. It's consistency. And I don't know. It feels like we talk more down than we talk up. But, something to keep an eye on. I think it's important. Again, I know that G1 usually is a solid time for them, right? So the idea of Zach having to defend the title and things being placed on his shoulders, I think if they were going to make a title change, now's the time because of G1, because G1 in and itself is the draw usually. But it's worrisome. We'll see what happens after G1 though.
Okay, I'm not going to go through all the matches here, but just the business end. We had the A block play match for the G1 climax, where Yohei Oiwa defeated Satoshi Kojima at 9 minutes 44 seconds. So Kojima, of course, was a relatively late replacement for Fat Fuck Farley, who had to return back to New Zealand after a bereavement. So we wish Fat Fuck Farley all the best there. Sorry, Fat Fuck Farley, not Fat Fuck Farley. I misspoke there. So Oiwa won this 9 minutes 44 seconds via the grip. This was all right. This was decent. Not really much you can expect from this at this point. What are our expectations for Oiwa going into the G1? I hear a lot of chatter, people critical of his finishing move. They don't like the grip, that sort of spinning lariat thing that he does.
Yeah. I don't mind it. It's fine. That's fine. You would think, like, if they're ever going to do something with the dude, that it would be, like, really kind of now. It doesn't feel like they've taken advantage of this at all. I would say better than 500. I think I'll have more wins than losses. I hope. Because if not, then let's put it this way. If he has more losses than wins, then I think the handwriting's on the wall that they don't, there's something wrong and the company doesn't see anything in them. I can't imagine them why, but okay. But yeah, I think this G1 will have more wins than losses.
Well, that's quite a bold prediction. I mean, I think with the current glacial pace that they are developing the new generation, that might be a while. We had then the B block player match where Yoshihashi defeated Chase Owens via Karma. So I had to watch this one live. I needed to watch this because I was so invested in it. And I think we got to give some credit to New Japan for making me so invested in the Chase Owens versus Yoshihashi match. I watched this one whilst taking my class on a swimming lesson, just as the lesson was wrapping up. So I'm standing there poolside with New Japan World out, just trying to surreptitiously watch on my phone. I'm like, I had to see. God. I needed to know that Chase Owens was not in the G1 climax. I would not have been able to continue with my day otherwise.
Four children needed CPR, but you watched them.
It's like, help me, I'm drowning. He's like, wait, he's
5 more minutes.
Just hit the high noon. It might be a 3 count here, guys.
keep doggy paddling. Come on, you can do it. I know that it felt good to have some stakes in the game, and it felt good to be rooting heavily in Yoshihashi's favor. I don't know if it's the best scenario of, like I don't necessarily want to give New Japan all this credit, in the sense of this is I'm trying to think of a term, but it's like not a hate watch, but I don't want Chase Owens in it so bad for all the wrong reasons, then, you know, that I'm rooting so hard for Yoshihashi, right? Yeah,
it's a stick more than a carrot, isn't it?
Thank you. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. So, but that being said, on any other planet, we would just be hand waving it, moving on with our fucking day. But you got the phone out with kids drowning in a fucking lake. I mean, you can't make that up. You can't build that. It has to come naturally. So good for you. You got your win. I don't know what we bet. I don't think we actually wound up betting, but I really felt in my heart of hearts that he was in. That Chase was in. So yes, I was right there with you in the sense of every near fall, everything. There's a lot on the line. And that's when pro wrestling is kind of fun. Not kind of fun. It is. It's super fun when you have some emotional stakes in it for whatever reason. Match was okay. I thought Yoshihashi did good. I thought Chase did okay as well.
I thought he was significantly worse than he was 2 years ago.
He's not great. No.
Slow, yeah. Sloppy. That's what expected given his age.
But the match was good, though, right? Do you think the match was good?
It was functional. No. I don't know if it goes as far to call it good.
How old I'm going good. How old? Probably 30. I'll say 34.
Yeah, he's 35. He doesn't look it.
Yeah, see, thank me. What do you want me to say? 56? 57?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, he's given a lot physically, so you know, maybe it's time for him to think about hanging up his cowboy boots.
Oh,
Father Time catches up to us all. Thank you for your years of service, Chase.
Yeah, listen.
I'm really happy Yoshihashi's back, and I think you need guys like Yoshihashi in the G1. So you're going to get effort and work rate and good underdog vibes, and he'll lose a ton of matches, and you need that. I don't want to see everyone on 8 points or 10 points. Yoshihashi is going to have probably 2 or 4 points, and that's good. That's fine. That's okay.
He's going to keep people honest. And by people, I mean us watching. Because I don't think anyone would be like, oh, this Yoshihashi beat whomever, and that's preposterous. In the same breath, if he loses, you're like, all right, you know, okay, makes sense, whatever. I think he's going to have a couple of surprisers, like wins that, again, just to keep people honest and keep people knowing that, okay, yeah, he's probably going to lose more than he wins, but those wins, they might be at someone's expense. And I think that's good. Again, when you have some type of emotional investment in it, it makes it so much better. So again, like I said, he'll have more losses than wins, but again, the wins that he get, I think, are going to be pretty significant.
It's just a little thing here, but looking at the first match that's opening up the G1 Climax next Saturday, July 19th, Yoshihashi versus Shingo Takagi. Ooh. I love that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. Fuck yeah, G1.
And you know they always start off with, you know, guys who you think would be bottom feeders, you know, going 3-0 and then, you know, shit in the bed the rest of the way. I don't know. Do you circle that one as a Yoshihashi win?
Could be. Should be. That one can certainly get tongues wagging nice and early, wouldn't they? They like to start things off with a few upsets.
Yeah. I mean, I tell you what, if there is an odds book out there and you get decent odds, I would put down some shekels on Yoshihashi to pick up the win. Absolutely.
Okay, then we have the NEVER Openweight Six-Man Tag Team Championship match with Master Huato Iyo and Toriano defeating Sho Yujiro Takahashi and Ren Narita. 12 minutes, 6 seconds. Yano pinned Yujiro after a low blow. Yep.
You think him being on that booking committee had anything to do with that? That's my first thought.
Yeah, that's it. All the guys just booking them, putting themselves over.
It really themselves did. Up. Good for him. Hey, listen, if you got it, flaunt it. That was my first thought. Be quiet. I'm like, of all people, really? Okay, all right. Yeah, the match was what it's exactly what you would expect, right? Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. All right, there you go. But good for Yano. Listen, you've earned that spot. You've earned that pencil. Circle yourself. Put an X next to somebody else's name and fuck them. There you go.
And again, good use of House of Torches. Just keep them in their lane.
Yeah. Yeah. Yano's.
Well, Yano. I did kind of spoil the following show because you knew that. Well, I certainly felt that Yo and Watto would not be winning the junior tag titles if they were already six-man champions. Although I probably put more thought into that than the company did.
Well, they got a lot on their plate, Joel. You know, there's a lot going on. G1, we got new champions. A lot to maintain. You got to cut them some slack, all right? Please.
And the main event was the IWGP Global Heavyweight Championship match with Gabe Kidd successfully defending against Hiroshi Tanahashi, 23 minutes 58 seconds, a drill a hole pile driver. I cast my mind back, Damon, to the Wrestle Dynasty match, the end of the Gabe Kidd Kenny Omega match, where Hiroshi Tanahashi is moved to tears by just the sincerity of the Gabe Kidd performance. Mm-hmm. And I do remember, like, there was genuine sentiment around that time that Gabe was a legitimate shout for the Tanahashi retirement match. I'm not misremembering that, am I? Like, people were actually thinking that.
I don't know if I was.
I definitely saw it out there. I think it was like, not that it wasn't nailed on or anything, but people thought, oh, okay, maybe there's some seeds here. And there was definitely the relationship between Gabe and Tanahashi was it was causing a lot of buzz then.
I think people were a little high on their supply, if that's the case.
1,377 fans turning up to watch this.
Yeah.
And some people are going to keep trying to tell you and sell you on the idea that Gabe Kidd hasn't called off. But the numbers don't lie. You know, who knows what the factors are that have cause this, but I think New Japan's stop-start booking is just as much to blame as the incoherent, conflicting narratives between partner promotions. I don't know. Like, each time I watch Gabe Kidd, he feels like a caricature of himself.
Yeah.
The key thing I tell my students when they're writing a story is show, don't tell. Don't tell me your character is sad. Show me that they're sad. And Gabe Kidd, it feels like he's doing awful lot of telling and not much showing. Now, I'm trying to kind of change my mentality because rather than sitting here and continuing to lament what Gabe has lost and what he should have been, I'll tell you what I think he should do now, and that's shut up for a bit, get back to basics, get back to what got you over with the fans in the first place, and that's just going out there and beating people up. Stop telling us you're the savior of New Japan. That was one of his catchphrases, wasn't it? Say less. Say less, gay kids. I thought this was a very good match. A lot of people are really down on it. They, you know, saying it was boring until the last couple of minutes. I personally don't agree with that. I think it built well. It sustained my interest. And, you know, nice story of Gabe trying to spark Tanahashi into showing some fire. I just think Gabe is still a really good wrestler. I think his matches would benefit from dropping the mid-match promos. It's just like very Amoresu coded behavior. I just find them very distracting and heavy-handed. Like, still really good wrestler. I'm looking forward to his G1. I just want him to get back to basics.
Yeah, it feels whatever authenticity that we were all clinging on to and being incredible fans of. Let's be honest. I think everybody was really excited about what the year was going to bring for him. I don't know. It feels less and less authentic. And again, it feels like a guy playing a role. And it's a shame because if we see it, I can't imagine what a Japanese fan base feels as well. I mean, we can speculate, but you're right. The numbers don't lie. And it doesn't feel like there's that we've got your back, Gabe, kind of feeling with the fans anymore. They cheer him, but it doesn't feel like it was before, that's for sure. I know that I went off on a little bit of a thing last show with Tanahashi. You know, I'm like, Tanahashi's winning this fucking title. Tanahashi's winning this fucking title. I'm going to say this. And this is not only this match, but in other matches that I was privy to over the week, I don't want to see him anywhere near a fucking title. And the fact that who was I listening to? Every time I ask that, it's always the same answer. It's fucking Flagship. And they were saying the same things in my head. The pulling up the pants. Like he's got the old man over there, a little bit of a belly thing, and the pants kind of falling down when you're too active. Trust me, I know it. I'm there. And like the Andre the Giant
rope.
Yeah, the Andre the Giant. I'm going to use the ropes to help me get up, kind of thing. I don't know. I'm not trying to make a joke. I'm not trying to be Mr. Punchline here. I don't know how the fuck he's going to survive a G1. Unless his matches are like 3 minutes. I don't know how he's going to make the grind of G1 work. He's had a very active year. He's had a very active year. And now we're going to put him in the middle of a G1. You have to, right? You have to. I understand. There's got to be a last one. And obviously this is it. I just don't know how the fuck he's going to pull this off. Now, if anyone can pull it off, it's him. I got to give him all the credit in the world. He's got enough in his knapsack to say, hey, I did this. I've done this. My history. I get it. This is a big ask. This is a big fucking ask. And unless there is some kind of fucking miracle drug, I don't know how the fuck he's going to do this.
I feel like even if he's got broken arms and legs, he's still going to drag himself into that ring somehow to...
But I don't want to see that.
I know. Like, I was going to ask you, do you feel he's a bit overexposed at this point? Do you think he's trying to do too much with this retirement, right? Like, and to the point at which these matches are not feeling special? Because again, like the attendance numbers, not great. You know, that's not to be suggesting that people are clamoring to see this retirement run. Do you think it's too much?
Yes and no. It's not like this is the first time that a pro wrestler has done this. The bar is so high with him that even when he was really good, it was noticeable that he wasn't excellent. And now that he's borderline good, it's if he just came out, did an air guitar, did a little L with his fingers, everyone can cheer, and he didn't, the bell never rang, and he just did that and walked back out, or back to the back, I think I would enjoy that more than the idea of him in a pro wrestling match. Like, not that it's doing any damage to his career. That's not what this is. We're not saying that. Or at least I'm not saying that. I'm saying I don't really have an interest in watching a guy whose body he has given time and time and time and time again go out there and give us the one last time you'll see me in the ring. Like, again, I know I'm a bit of a fucking weirdo. I get it. But I don't really go to funerals because I don't want the last memory of a person to be in a coffin. That's me. I'd rather my last memories be of whatever, right? And I feel like that to a certain degree. Like, I'm watching a guy – I don't know. And look – we all know that the dome is now centered around him. Like this, the fucking Wrestle Kingdom shows are Tanahashi's bringing the house. It's probably too much. I get why they're doing it. I get the fact that there is a possibility, and why wouldn't you milk it? It's pro wrestling. I get it. I understand, but I don't know if I can. I don't want him in G1. I understand that he needs to be there. I do want him there. I don't want this version of him in there. And yeah, we're gonna see a lot of Hiroshi Tanahashi. We're gonna see a lot of Hiroshi Tanahashi in situations that, quite frankly, I care not to see him in.
Let's talk about the next show then, which was New Japan Soul in Korakuen Hall on Sunday, July the 6th. I did just want to give some attention to the kickoff matches. I watched Tatsuya Matsumoto against Zane Jay. They went to a 10-minute time limit draw, but I'm enjoying the series of matches between them. I like the ferocity of their work. I think Matsumoto has got quite an interesting style of going after an arm. He's going for fishing for like kimuras and stuff. It's quite unusual for a young lion to have a style this early on. And Zane going for the knee. It was like a limb match. I don't think I've seen a young lion limb match before. So I just wanted to say that if you've not seen their work before, then yeah, do check out Matsumoto and Zane J, because they do good stuff on these kickoff matches. And the other kickoff match, which was the rest of the young lions, where we had Daikin Nagai and Katsuya Morishima against Masatoru Yasuda and Shoma Kato. So Daikin Nagai picked up another win. So he's on a little winning streak in these young lion matches. He got the submission over Yasuda, 8 minutes 21 seconds by Boston Crab. Honestly, this was one of my favourite matches on the show. And I don't think any of these guys are necessarily nailed on future stars, but they're grown on me. They're all fired up. They're being little pricks to each other. And I thought the match was really well laid out, and they extracted the maximum drama you can get from that Boston Crab spot that they always do. And sometimes when I'm getting annoyed with stuff that's happening higher up in the card, it's nice to go back to the Young Lion openers as a little palate cleanser, sort of, you know, remember what New Japan are really good at with the fundamentals like that. And I think we should talk about Daikin Nagai, because I had all these thoughts before they did the angle later on in the show. I was just looking at how he carried himself in this match, and Daikin Nagai, he gets it. He's got it. He's got that dog in him. Like, I think to be a really successful pro wrestler, you need to have that unshakable belief that you're the fucking man, whatever happens. And there's just, I feel too many of these newer guys in New Japan just, they look like they're just happy to be there. Mm. You know, they're happy chugging along in the mid card, being polite to everyone and trying not to ruffle anyone's feathers. But Daikin Nagai carries himself like he knows the other guys don't belong in the same ring as him, and treating them with utter disdain and contempt. And he's got his prickish facial hair, and that bit at the end of the match where he was just dunking the ice pack on Yasuda like a basketball. That's what I want. I want wrestlers being pricks to each other. And then later on in the show, when he comes out and stops Shingo and Hiromu and who's the other guy? Tsuji from leaving, and was like, "Oi, I want to join you guys." So he is then offered the unaffiliated t-shirt backstage. And I'm wondering, like, is this like a chicken or egg thing? Like, why has he been given this acceleration beyond everyone else in his class? And I think it's because he carries himself with that bit of edge, that bit of spice. And he is a little prick. And, you know, we've heard before, you know, his backstage promos where he's just going off on people. He's not been told to do that. He's just doing it by himself. And I think New Japan needs a bit more of that. And it's paying off for Daikin Nagai. And also, I think to some extent, if he's been told prior to this show, right, today there's going to be this angle in the middle of the show and you're going to join Tsuji and Hiromu and Shingo, that's going to put a bit of a spring in his step as well, isn't it? It's sure. Like one of these things where if you book them strongly, then they're going to have a bit more confidence and a bit of swagger. So it's a two-way street, really, I think. You know, it's good. I would love to see more people like Daikin Nagai being ready to stick their neck out and ruffle a few feathers and not just be, oh yes, I'm very happy to be here. I'm going to try my best, da-da-da. But I also think that booking people strongly and giving them interesting things to do can also help to fuel that. So I just think I was just very excited from what I saw from Daikin Nagai on the show, and encouraging that they're doing something with it. I don't think, you know, I don't think he's going to skip the excursion. I think he'll do a mini excursion similar to like what Oiwa and Fujita did. And yeah, I just think it's a nice move. It's good to see them capitalizing on that, and I'm quite excited to see where that goes.
It does stick out, doesn't it? Like, it does, especially in the Young Lion environment. Like, it does feel like it's not super duper well outside. It's not like fucking, you know, Adrian Street just showed up. But it is refreshing. Now, I would temper that with, I don't know if it would be as special if everyone did that. You know, like, he stands out. And again, if it's him doing that, that takes a lot of fucking balls in that environment, I would say. I don't think that that more than likely, it probably didn't go over well with a lot of people if, in fact, he was going rogue and decided, fuck it, I'm doing this, right? It does take a lot of balls. You like to see it, right? But you're right. Like, he still has to pull it off, and he still has to make it work in that small closed box of being a young lion. Maybe the company does see that as, hey, you know what? This fucking guy, he's got something. So let's throw him a bone. Or not, you know, who knows? But yeah, it is amazing when you do have that square peg round hole, you know, in an environment where everyone is the same. And again, he's still the same as others, but yet different. There is something commendable about that. Because to me, that restrictive environment, that's very difficult to stand out. And I say it a trillion times, I don't care about the fucking moves. I don't care that he could take a fucking hip toss. I don't – like, that's what the dojo's for. It's, how does he connect with people outside the ring? How does he connect with his peers? How does he connect with his seniors? How does he connect with the crowd? Those are the most important things that I try to look for when watching Young Lions matches. Joe, that doesn't mean that any of this means anything in 3 years, right? We've seen it time and time again with these Young Lions. But the fact that there are these little, you know, little nuggets of, you know, here's a little more, can you handle it? Here's a little bit more, can you handle it? Things look really good there. You know, it feels like we have someone who is head and shoulders above the rest and has the making of something special, should I say, air quotes? Because it does to me. I'm not saying he's headlining a fucking dome in 5 years. I'm not making that mistake again. But I am saying that there is something there that's over and above what we would normally get from a young lion. And I think that should be cherished.
Yeah, it's something different at the very least. So
right.
That's, again, worth celebrating and something that stands out in, it feels like an era where there's not too many people doing that, willing to take those risks. So, yeah, I just want to sort of hold on to that and hope that, you know, we're not going to stick to the ultra conservative slow motion booking for him. But yes, we'll have to wait and see on that one. Next match I want to talk about was the Hiroshi Tanahashi Final Road Kinship and Tiger Mask 30th anniversary. So Tanahashi defeated Tiger Mask 9 minutes and 39 seconds. I always enjoy watching Tiger Mask. I like grumpy prick Tiger Mask. And he has announced that he's going to retire next July, I think he said. So
yeah, 2020.
The Tiger Mask retirement tour. So we're booking my flights for that, Damon. No, but in all seriousness, I think he's had a great career. And yeah, I'll be interested to see what the plans are. Is he going to do much international travel to make the most of this, or is he just going to stick mainly in Japan? So something worth thinking about. And I mean, yeah, you touched on it before. Tanahashi, he looked pretty rough following the Gabe Kidd match. And moreover, David, do you know how many main events, main events in the G1 Tanahashi's in at the moment?
I don't. Let me guess, though. Over 5.
Okay.
I'll say, how many?
Well, how 10? Many do you think in?
6.
Is that how many you think he should be in, or how many you think he is in?
I think he is in 6, and he should be in probably 2, if that.
Okay, now you've gone over it. It's 5, but still 5. Wow. 5 out of 9. That's a lot. 5 main events in the G1 climax. That is going to be a big ask.
Oh, the drugs must be fucking wonderful there. I mean, how is he going? Who are they against? Do you know? Do we know?
Not off the top of my head. I'd have to look it up.
Okay, maybe somebody will quickly get that for us. Yeah, I'd be curious to find out who the five main events. What does that tell you?
Right, I think I can find them now. So July 19th, it's Tanahashi versus Taichi.
Okay.
Then on July 25th, it's Tanahashi versus Finlay. Oh, then July 27th, Tanahashi versus Oiwa. And then August the 1st, Tanahashi versus Yuya Uemura. And then August the 3rd, Tanahashi against Yota Tsuji.
I mean, those are a lot of those are back-to-backers, aren't they? At the end, it is, right? You said first and the third, right?
Yeah.
Whew. Good God almighty. I tell you. God bless him. There's the fucking cold baths and the Epsom salts and the I don't know what else we need. Jeez.
How many days until we see the cupping?
Oh, yes. Oh, he's going to look like a fucking – he's going to look like Dusty Rhodes. He's going to look like circa WWE. Oh, my – the polka dots are plenty. God damn. I don't know how he's going to do it. You know what? But it's like watching a car crash. Like, I'm going to be – how many – how can he do it? All right. I'm going to set – I don't think he makes five. I think he's out for injury. No, they can't because this thing's all centered around his last one. This is not like a Nakamura situation.
I don't think he would accept that. I don't think he would acknowledge that he's injured. I think he would refuse to.
Oh, my God. It's going to be like a Dynamite Kid situation where they just carry him into the ring and then, okay, hit the cameras. They're on. All right, pin him. 1, 2, 3, and I'll carry him out. Oh, boy. God damn it. It sucks, too, because we're talking about him in a negative light.
Is there not a little bit about this that's exciting to you to see, like how he physically deteriorates over the course?
Do I want
to
see a grown man shit in the ring? No. You know what I mean? Like I'm worried about him keeping his fucking bowels under control at this point.
Anyone who's seen the movie The Substance, it's going to be like that. It's just like at the end of the G1, he's just going to be like this horrific. Massive broken down flesh, just like,
I mean, what? Oh, like, this is a perfect example. Again, there's so many conflicting things going on between, hey, you're doing it for the fans. Hey, you're doing it for the money. Hey, you're doing it for the company's money. Hey, you know, this is the last run. Boy, oh boy, this is asking a lot. Physically, again, mentally is a different story. Sharp as a fucking tack, and I'm sure it's the body. It's not working. I gotta be honest with you. I feel bad for him. I feel bad for him. Fuck. I don't know how he's gonna do it, but I'll be there to watch. I'll be there to watch.
Right, so then we had the G1 Climax 35 Last Chance Playing Gauntlet. So preface to that was Hiroki Goto withdrawing from the G1 Climax, so they're being an extra spot up for grabs. So they had all the people who lost their playing matches, as Ishii, Kojima, Taichi, and Chase Owens, having a match together, gauntlet match with a random entry decided to fight for that last spot in the A block. And got to hand it to them, Damon. I think masterful storytelling with an admittedly a short storyline. You know, it wasn't a huge amount of time to tell this, but I think we all got played like a fiddle. And I love it.
Yeah.
Work me. I love being worked. Now, my conspiracy theory coming out of this is that I think they've known Taichi was getting Goto's spot a long time ago. I think they knew it before they even announced the blocks at Dominion. Because everything just fits too perfectly for Taichi being in the A block.
You think he's seeing the injuries at work?
I don't know if he is out of the G1 because of an injury, or if he's just taken some time off, or it was agreed like he was going to work this, you know, really heavy schedule as champion and then he's going to take time off over the summer. But I think they've known for a while that he was not going to be participating in the G1, and I think they've known that it was going to be Taichi taking that spot, because Taichi's been laying it on so thick with his promos, with the G1 talk, like nice and early, he's been doing that. And having that heartbreaking loss in the play-in to Callum Newman at Corakuen Hall, and then getting the redemption in front of the same fans at Corakuen, you know, him doing this all, oh, the G1 doesn't need Taichi. And then now suddenly, oh, the G1 does need Taichi, and he's ready to answer the call. Opening night in Sapporo, which of course is Taichi's home prefecture. And I said that I did some special audio on the Patreon when this news dropped to preview this match. And I laid all this out and said, I would not be surprised if on the opening night we get Tanahashi versus Taichi. And that's exactly what we've got. Same block as Yuo Emura, who was his Just Five Guys Kohai. He's in the same block as Sanada, who is the guy who betrayed him and left Just Five Guys to join the War Dogs. This is all too good to be an accident. So I think this is intentional. I think they knew exactly what they're doing. And it's just occurred to me that... I'm going to save that thought for later. I'm going to try and stick a pin in that in my brain. But I want to hand it to Chase Owens for the role that he played in this whole play-ins thing, because I think that was maximised and got a lot of drama out of it. Maybe not the right kind of drama, like the stick rather than the carrot sort of drama, because, you know, as you know, David, I was frothing at the mouth when I saw him announce versus Yoshihashi, because we were all convinced he was winning that. Like, right. His mere presence created such a looming sense of threat and menace and dread that him getting pinned by both Yoshihashi and then Taichi brought me a lot of joy. Now, I should say that I think the fans were more excited by the Sanada run-in with his big Astro Boy boots than whatever Chase was doing himself, but that's fine. And what I was going to say is I thought it was good use of the House of Torture affiliation, and maybe that's why they put Chase in House of Torture in the first place, so that they could have Sanada doing this run-in during this match to build heat between Sanada and Taichi for the G1 Climax A block. So just throwing that out there as a theory. So if you're thinking, well, why is Chase Owens put in House of Torture? That could be why, just so that they could have Sanada do this run-in. And when the start of the match happened, we started off with Chase against Kojima, which again is exactly how I laid it out when I did the Patreon preview. I felt good at that point because I was like, there is no way in hell that Chase Owens is pinning Kojima and Taichi and Ishii. Like, that's not happening. So he got his win over, he pinned Kojima for some heat, and then Taichi came out. We did all the House of Torture stuff to get more heat and booing. But then I thought when Ishii came out to make the save, that created a lot of drama and the fans seemed to like that. And again, this kind of mid-card use of House of Torture, I don't mind. I think that's an effective use of the premise. And then we got all that shit out of the way and we had what I thought was a really compelling match, which was a G1 quality match in and of itself between Ishii and Taichi at the end. And, you know, really nice story between them where it's Taichi's one-time rival and now tag team partner and now opponent who's helping him tap into his own fire and his fighting spirit to show that he is worthy of being in the G1. And yeah, just a very, very cool match, just really well executed all rounds. And I think this is a long-term plan. I don't believe this was a pivot. I think they've had this planned out for ages.
You might be right. I mean, it makes sense. It felt like they took the long way home, but they got there. The right people are in. Taichi was amazing. I think he was stellar. And lest anyone think that, you know, he's undeserving or, I mean, I can't imagine people in this day and age still in that camp. He fucking delivered again. And in Ishii, you know, for all the you know, little tongue-in-cheek, elbow-in-the-ribs kind of, you know, things that we say about Ishii at this point. When it's go time, fucking great. I think all of that, I think all the nonsense helped the entire concept of this gauntlet. And they got it out of the way, and I think that was a really good job. We've shit on a lot of New Japan booking recently. I thought that whole concept and whole delivery was really fucking good. Like, to me, that was entertaining pro wrestling. Like, that entire match, main event, gauntlet, whatever you want to call it. Like, I loved it. I thought it was really outstanding. And once again, when he gets to the tap on the fucking shoulder, man, talk about a guy who's become Mr. Dependable. Fucking Taichi, man. It's pretty remarkable how he can deliver in a fucking spot. And here, I'll say it right here and now. I don't give a fuck about how many wins, and I don't give a fuck about how many losses. Joel, I guarantee it. I guarantee it. By the end of this tournament, we'll be talking about him as at least a candidate as an MVP for this tournament. He's got the goods, and he has delivered the goods, and quite frankly, he is the goods. Like, we're going to see some really fucking great matches with him, and I can't wait. And to me, every night that he's on that show is must watch. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. Like, he is a guy that shockingly, you could sit here in the year 2025 and say, you need a really fucking good match bordering on great. Give Taichi the tap. Give Taichi the tap. The tap.
So Derek says, with Goto out, do you think Taichi would get his booking in the G1? If the plan was to take the belt off him before the G1, wouldn't they have still wanted to keep him strong afterwards? Or do you think they'll just flatline with a bunch of guys tied for points?
So what the problem is, Joel, I think that, did anyone think Hiroki Goto was going to win G1?
They would have thought that as the then world champion, that he would make it at least to the playoffs, like the latter stages of the tournament.
Top three. I mean, maybe they didn't want that, and they did the right thing by just having him out of the tournament. You know, you don't want your fucking world champion to go, you know, 500. You kind of want them to really be in the mix, and I feel like they have other plans, don't they?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think they had no intention of putting Goto in the G1.
Period. Yeah.
Yeah,
you might be right. It makes sense. It does add up. The math does math. So, yeah. But Taichi was great. Ishii, I thought, was great. And again, I think Chase played his role really well. You know, getting the win over, you know, Kojima, and everyone's kind of, you know, right. If you're thinking of it, you know, okay, well, maybe he just got that out of the way, and you know, there's no fucking way he's running the table here. But, you know, he got it. He beat a guy who is a legend. I thought that was really good pro wrestling, man. I really did. I enjoyed that thoroughly. And if this was the game plan all along, and we were just fucking rubes, God bless him. If that's the case, then I give them all the credit in the world. That was really, really solid. And they took us for a little bit of a ride.
Now, do you think we go all the way with Taichi and have him win the G1 and challenge Zack Sabre Jr. at the main event of Wrestle Kingdom? Because I know I've complained at length about lateral movement of the world title between aging mid-carders, but that's only good when it's an aging mid-carder that I like. So actually, that would be good booking. Fuck the youth. I'm not interested in seeing a next generation getting their title wins. I want Taichi Dome.
There you go. Tekker Dome. I think that is a zero chance of happening, but I love your energy and spirit, and you do need something to cling to right now, so I'm going for it.
Great. Then we had the IWGP Junior Tag Championship match. Doki and Sho defeating Master Wato and Yo. 30 minutes, 52 seconds. Suplex Della Luna. Doki got the pin over Wato. I don't know, man. Like, it was okay. It wasn't a bad match. I'm two thoughts here, right? One, I'm lamenting what we've lost from the junior tag division, because part of me is tempted to say, oh yeah, no, this is okay. House of Torture can be in occupy this space. It's only the junior tag titles. That's fine. They can have that. Just keep them out of the, you know, the bigger stuff at the higher end of the card. But then I think we should have higher expectations for the junior tag titles. And it's been so great in recent years. That's been some of the highlights of the year, the kind of stuff that we were seeing from, you know, guys like Clark and Driller and Catch 2-2 and Eagles and Fujita. It's been so good that it's a downgrade. And that's not good. That's not a good feeling. And it's just with Doki, it's upsets me seeing him House of Torture, because it's like when a wrestler joins House of Torture, they're never going to evolve or develop or progress. No one's left House of Torture yet. No one's quit the faction. And they've been doing the same shit for 5 years. So it just feels like when a wrestler joins House of Torture, it's like they've been deleted. Like the cool wrestler that they were before is just gone. And now they're this sort of static, two-dimensional comic book villain. So, and I just sort of looking at this as a kind of, also the second thought being a junior heavyweight purgatory, where we've got all these guys who at one point you thought, oh, you know, maybe they're going to be the next guy in the division. And then for a variety of reasons, the push has stalled and they've gone back to, you know, your Hiromus and Ishimuris and El Desperados. And now we've got a bunch of guys here who don't really feel like they're going to achieve much of significance or interest in the foreseeable future.
It's always like, I'm happy that Doki returned, right? But not like this. And I think a lot of people echo that. Look, there is something to be said of when he does turn. And they had this pre-made, pre-packaged, ready-to-go return thing with Doki that it was right there. Like, I don't know. I don't know what the purpose of this is. I don't know. I don't know. You're right. Nobody, look, it's not like your character, your pro wrestling persona becomes more nuanced by joining House of Torture. In fact, it's pretty fucking one-dimensional. I don't know. Look, I hope the merch sales and those residuals are fucking sweet and they're paying for some nice things for you and your family. Wonderful. It's not something that I wish on anyone, but apparently I'm wrong in that. So look, I don't have a good answer, man. I don't have a good answer. If you are a person who, and again, I'll use Doki as the example. Like, if you're a fan, you got to put that on pause for a little bit because you're not going to get much. Like, you'll get shit. Like, he's going to work hard, but I think at the end of the day, you're going to be disappointed. I could be wrong. I think you'll be disappointed. And I think a lot of people are. Unless there's some creativity and unless there's, again, a little bit more wiggle room for him outside of the House of Torture box. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's a step back. I feel like it's a step back for a lot of people. Like, I don't know. Does Show ever fucking recover? Like, do you see Show recovering from this? And again, are the residual checks good? Are the fucking, you know, maybe they are. Maybe it is. And it's fuck Damon. Who gives a shit? I don't know. I don't see how this is a good thing. But, you know, maybe we have people in there that can make chicken salad out of chicken shit.
Then we got the main event, which was the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship match, where El Desperado defeated Kosei Fujita 19 minutes and 32 seconds by Numero Dos. What did you think of the match, Damon, and the booking?
We praised them earlier, didn't we? Wasn't it like 10 minutes ago, 5 minutes ago? What I don't know. I thought the match was good. I mean, to me, I'm left scratching my head sometimes. It's not like we're talking of a guy who had all this fucking momentum and we were, you know, it was, you know, the second coming of fucking Steve Austin. That being said, it's just kind of like, all right, what are we doing? Like, I don't know. How's it? Is it helping anyone here? Help me understand it, Joel. Like, is this helping anyone? Who's it helping?
I feel like I could just sort of copy and paste what I said last week and what I've been saying for feels like months, if not years now, about how decisions in isolation, in a vacuum, you could be like, okay, yeah, I can see why they did this. But it gives us a big, big problem with the bigger picture. I thought the match was great. Like, I thought the work between like all the transitions and the counters, like countering their submission moves into one another, and like the way that they were able to sort of like grab a hold in the middle of a move. I thought, yeah, some of the sort of technical quality of the work was brilliant. I liked Fujita's sex coat. That was very good. Big fur coat. He had lots of riz, as the kids would say. But a lot of people, certainly on our Discord, were hoping, expecting, demanding Fujita to win. But Despy retains. And I think Fujita will be okay. He's still only 22, so he's going to get his moment.
Yeah.
But yet again, it was an opportunity for New Japan to do something exciting and bold and say, like, here's a guy.
Commit. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
But commit. They didn't. And they've kept it on Despy. And Despy's brilliant. He is arguably one of the best wrestlers in the company, one of the biggest stars of the company. So I don't have a problem with him retaining in this instance. What I do have an issue is, again, if we keep doing this and having young guys nearly get the big moment, but they're not quite getting there, and we've got to do this building character through adversity and failure and suffering with everyone, then it's not very interesting or exciting. And I look at where Fujita was and how he felt before Best of the Super Juniors and where he is now, and it doesn't feel like he doesn't feel hotter than he did before the tournament even started, which is a big failure in my eyes, that they had this kid win Best of the Super Juniors and then challenge for the junior heavyweight title, and now it just feels like he's going to go back into that junior heavyweight purgatory that I mentioned before. He's just, you know, he's Watto now. He's on the Watto level. And he's in there in the mulch with Doki and Sho and Yo and all those other dorks.
Yeah. The only thing that I kind of was like, all right, maybe I get it, is the fact that, you know, during this time of the year, the juniors are pretty much put on pause. They might be in a multi-man tag to set up a fucking match, you know, for the next night or what have you, or so maybe they said, hey, you know what, we're not going to do it now because you're just going to be carrying a title and it's not like, you know, it's going to be a high profile thing with the juniors. Maybe. So I did kind of talk myself into some comfort with that. But that said, I mean, it's just another one that you put in the folder of, if not now, when? It seems like we have a lot of
very tiresome. It's the same booking all the time, isn't it? They lose their first title challenge, they lose the second title challenge, but oh, they won the third one. And if you do that with everyone, then it just feels boring and predictable.
Right. The best thing about pro wrestling, once again, is when you have stakes and emotional investment and you don't know. And it does feel like there is that New Japan pattern of, well, of course they're not going to win their first one because they're not ready yet. And maybe the second one, but the third one, they got their number now. And it's like, all right, we've seen it kind of feels like a lot. And again, like I said, another one that you can put in the old folder of, okay, if not now, when? No one's complaining that Despy is the champion, right? No, I mean, we love him. We think the fucking world of him. It's just like, once again, if not now, when?
I'm just trying to think if there's anything else. I feel like I've forgotten something. It feels like there should be more stuff to talk about.
Before you think, I do have to mention when I got to plug something, and I promised I would. Our good friends, Keeping It Strong Style, they're doing their own little Patreon thing. And by all means, if you got the funds, give them a couple bucks as you're giving us. Give us first, though, because we need it more. but that being said,
I did a live stream, a live watch along with the playing Gauntlet match thing. I ran upstairs when it was happening, hit record, and I did live commentary of that match. So,
tell me that.
Yeah, a lot of good shit on the Patreon in the last week. So, there was audio as soon as the Gotto news was announced, where I gave my predictions and analysis of that situation, and it was fucking spot on. I called every single thing that would happen down to the last detail. And yeah, then there's 35 minutes of me doing commentary on the Chase Owens, Kojima, Taichi, and Ishii match. So
nice. New Japan needs a B team announcing team. Yeah.
I might do the daily audio for the G1.
Wow. There's commitment. I got to talk to you because, obviously I'm not doing next week. No, I'll be available next week. Yeah, next week, but not the following week. So we'll figure something out. Anyway, Keeping It Strong Style, the kids over there, doing a pretty awesome job on their Patreon with the they have a little Tanahashi retrospective that they're doing. Well done there. So, again, I don't know what their tiers, but I would highly recommend giving that a – if you got a couple extra bucks in your pocket, I think it's a good spend. Again, give us money first. But –
I like that. Yeah. You tried to do a kind thing and plug their thing, and then I completely derailed it. Put myself over.
Well, here's the problem. I promise a lot, but deliver very little on my promises. So the minute I remembered, because I did forget the whole entire fucking show, the minute I remembered, I was like, oh, I promised I would. So there it is. I'm in good graces now. But yes, that.
Josh, Jeremy, you can put the plug for our Patreon anywhere you want in the show. Maybe near the top. We don't want it near the end because people just skip that. So the top or the middle of the show, that's fine.
Yeah, preferably the front. I think you should do the music and then just jump right into it.
Actually, because I usually skip that bit. Some people got the settings on their podcast app where it will skip the first 1 or 2 minutes to get past the preamble of that. Scrumpy, mate. What?
I hear, yeah. You're telling me I'm not going to get any sleep there, right? That's what that is, right?
I've sent you the graphic with the finalized G1 Climax lineup because I needed to see that graphic before I could visualize and predict the tournament and sort of appreciate what it is and what I think it's going to feel like. I need to see all those faces, like the graphic with the 20 guys before I can say if I'm excited for it or not. So looking at those two blocks now, so A block, Tanahashi, Taichi, Yuya, Oleg, Tsuji, Oiwa, Newman, Finlay, Evil, Sanada, and then B block, Umino, ELP, Yoshihashi, Shingo, Zach, Great Okan, Gabe, Driller, Ren, Takeshita.
Yeah.
Now, we were quite down on the field when it was announced at Dominion when we got the first 16 names. How are we feeling now? We've got
scale 1 to 10. Scale 1 to 10. 7. 7. How about you?
I think I might even be a little defiant 8.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, block A. Again, it depends on fucking the drugs that Hiroshi Tanahashi can fucking find.
I'm encouraged by the fact that Evil and Sanada's been not buried, but backloaded. So there's not, there's very few semi. I don't think that, I need to get the J. Michael document that's got their booking. We'll do like a proper. G1 preview next week, but he sent me the thing that's got their card placement, and yeah, both of them are fairly middling in terms of the card placement, so it's not like we're getting loaded up with House of Torture semis and main events, so that is, I think, a good sign.
I think B Block looks really fucking strong, actually. They have a lot of interesting matchups, B Block.
I think everyone's going to have their working boots on.
Oh, everyone will have their working boots
on. People are hearing stuff and reading stuff. They know that the vibes are not great at the moment, and I think they're going to work really hard to change that.
B Block should be sexy. I'm really digging that. And I think A Block, too.
A 7. Solid 7 right now. And trust me, look, it's G1. Get fucking... It's going to be good. I can't sit here and tell you it's not going to be good. You know it's going to be good. They're going to have their fucking boots on. They're going to get the work. Do we have concerns? Of course we do. Is it? Do they have the sexy outsider? Okay, maybe not. It's G1. They know what's on the fucking line here. I'm not saying night 5 is going to be spectacular, but I'm saying there's going to be enough good shit in there sprinkled in. More than a sprinkled thing, lumped in, that it's going to be worth your time. It's G1 fucking season, people. Let's get fucking hyped.
All right, so a few questions we'll get out of here. K Loves Wrestling says, do you think New Japan views Takeshita on equal footing with the likes of Shota and Tsuji, or is he seen more of an outside guy due to not going through the dojo? I'd love to see him win the G1, but I'm nervous that they'd try again with the Musketeers before him. Now, I'm kind of getting some vibes from people around the podcasting sphere that seem to suggest there might be something in a Takeshita G1 climax win. Now, there's nothing, this is not people that I regularly talk to. There's just this little stuff that I've heard and read that's made me think, huh.
I don't think anybody would complain about that. I think there's always a little bit of concern when you have a dude splitting time between all the different and various promotions that he has. But it's not like he's the first guy to fucking do this. We've said it from the jump, Joel. Like, if they have a stud, it's him. Young, fucking incredible in the ring. A presence. Like, if they have a star, it's him. And they could pull the trigger. And I don't think anyone would bitch and moan about that. I'd be okay. Like, he's a stud. Make it happen. I got no problem with that.
Oh, there's a news item here that I forgot to mention, Daniel, which is that Shibata wrote in his diary that the LA Dojo is bankrupt. They can't afford rent. Huh. They're asking AEW for help, and specifically blames former presidents Tezuka and Obari for running it into the ground.
Oh. I mean, there's another person I would probably put on that list, but I'll bite my tongue. I don't know. I don't think it's a coincidence that they're not running many U.S. shows, right? Bankrupt, huh?
Yeah. Shibata and Kushida both cut from their coaching duties. So, yeah, no longer serving the function of developing athletes.
That's... While it's
so,
not
I'm just
good.
Reading a thread here. There's more to this. It says the LA Dojo was created simply to secure a place for Tezuka, who cannot stay in Japan. This is machine translate, so I don't know if the validity of that. But
When it was original, again, there has been various times in New Japan's history where there has been a California dojo. We were all pretty excited. Let's be honest. It never really bore the fruit. That's a word. Or a series of words. It never really materialized anything that we would be overly excited about. Right? It wasn't like they produced this stud and away we went through to greatness in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And I think it's evident the fact that the idea of U.S. shows – I don't like to see people lose jobs, though. That's the one thing. I might not be the biggest fan of the product they produce, but I don't like the idea of people losing a job. And in essence, that's what happens. And let's also be honest here. For all the giggles and, once again, the elbow in the ribs kind of thing, it was a place for – fucking talent that isn't signed to learn the craft in a little bit of a high profile environment. I guess my biggest question now is that so those dudes who win the opening match, you know, and they have to be on the next show and the next show, that just ends, right? We're not doing that anymore. That just goes bye bye. All right. Well, that sucks. Actually, it's pretty sad that that's the case, but I hate people losing jobs, man. That sucks, but hopefully they come back. And
it looks like they've like completely pulled the plug on the US, the New Japan of America, because there's no shows scheduled for it. We hear nothing about that. It seems like they've just quietly cut bait on that.
It had a lot of promise at one time, Joel. It really did. I remember that first fucking Long Beach show. Place was packed. It was rocking and rolling. Those were the days. My, oh, my. My, oh, my. That is. I think, you know what? I feel like that's significant news. It's significant in the sense that what an abysmal failure it's been. A lot of promise. Never fucking delivered. That's sad. Oh, well. All right. Way to go, Joel. You open the show with horrible news and you close it with horrible news.
What else we got here? Lewis says, when are we going to get the real summit event for the J-Cast, the Super Shenmue cast with Rich Craich? Yeah, okay. I will get on to Rich. I need him to play Shenmue 2, ideally, and maybe Shenmue 3, but we could, yeah, I'll definitely get him on the Patreon. He'd be up for that, I reckon.
He would do that over a wrestling talk, that's for sure.
Do we think there would be one or two January Dome shows with Tanahashi retirement? It would make sense to put all the eggs in the Egg Dome on January 4th instead of distracting from that. Or do we want to try and sell as many tickets as we can for the Salute One product? I would think with TV Asahi broadcasting the January 4th show, you'd want to make it look as impressive as possible for that great exposure. Yeah, as far as I know, it's just January 4th. I think if there was something on January 5th, they would have announced it by now. So my understanding is just one January Dome show.
Yep.
And last one here, Jersey Joe Gotch says, is there any parallel with Zack Sabre Jr. being a technical wrestler, clearly the best wrestler in the company and business is down, and Bret Hart in the 90s when WWF business was down? Bret as champ was blamed as a cause, as is Zack as champ, when perhaps they're merely victims of circumstance. I will say, I don't know if you caught that, you probably wouldn't have done, but a backstage promo from Zack where he was a lot more serious and aggressive and mean, and he said like, "Oh, I'm not here to be the fucking hero. If these any little cunts want to come and have a go, everyone's just listening to the Super J-Cast, aren't they, Damon? They're hearing what we're saying and changing stuff immediately to fit our particular tastes." But no, seriously, that was a nice change of direction. And is Zach getting unfairly maligned? I mean, there's a lot of stuff. Other stuff that's happening with, you know, Okada leaving and Naito leaving, which I think is responsible for a lot of the ticket sales falling. And I don't think you can blame all that on Zach. But yeah, what do you reckon?
Pro wrestling's weird. I mean, I appreciate the analogy and the comparison. I don't know if it's a wrestling style kind of thing. I'm just trying to think of like comparatives of where they are and like where WWF was at the time and where New Japan is now. I don't know if there are a ton. It does feel like a little bit more of a transition-y kind of thing. New Japan taking its sweet time in that process. Yeah, I mean, there are similarities, I would say. I would have to really look into it and really think about the answer off the top of my head. I want to say no, it's just a coincidence. But, you know, maybe there is something to be said about that, where as much as we appreciate the pro wrestling, maybe we've, as a pro wrestling community, we've moved on from that. I don't know. I say that, but yet I still hold true that the people who listen to this show are, you know, I don't want to say cut from the same cloth. Everybody has different tastes and like different things, but I think there's a common thread when it comes to the pro wrestling a little bit. I don't know. Hard to say. Good question, though. Gotch comes up with the good questions. I will say that. It's a good job. They always seem to come through.
Always seems to come through.
Yeah, it seems good, to be sort of questions. It's 50% abuse and 50% good questions.
Oh, really?
Keeps you on my toes, which I always appreciate.
I hope that's directed at you and not me.
Tweet out of nowhere. It's like, you fucking idiots. Why did you say this?
Like, really?
And then he's saying really nice stuff afterwards. I think maybe he feels guilty about being unkind. And
if we deserve something, if we have a take or whatever, feel free. I mean, I think that's fair game. I just don't want to get any personal attacks, Joel. Please.
Speaking of personal attacks, did you see he was in the mentions several days ago?
What? No, what?
El Desperado.
In your mentions?
Yeah. Now, it was
not
intentional. So there was a new NJPW World put out a little video clip of part of the Despy Fujita match. And then someone replied to the tweet. So the New Japan World tweet had Despy and Fujita tagged in it. Then someone replied to it. This was Boom Boom Daddy, replied to it with at the Super J Cast, at the Chris Hamster, at Reason JP, fuck this company. When are they going to finally strap a rocket to one of these young guys? And then reply from El Desperado saying, then don't watch, you're so annoying.
Wow.
And so I was at it in all of this, and I had to reply and to Despy, clarifying our position. I said, excuse me, please, Mr. El Desperado, sir. I do not condone the opinions that I've been tagged in and would kindly request your permission to continue watching. Thank you. And he liked that. He hit the like button. So we are allowed to continue watching New Japan. So,
you know what? I'm glad he has the title. Good for him. You know what? long live El Despy. Long live. Is that it? All right.
That's it.
Goodbye.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.